Yeah, I'm talking about Michael Jackson, and he was running into, he was trying to refinance the Neverland Ranch, and I overheard his brother talking next to me, and being the outgoing nut that I was, I opened my mouth and said, you know, I couldn't help but overhear, but you know, that's what I specialize in. I specialize in hard money lending, and it seems that's exactly what you're looking for. And so months and months, this was a big deal, obviously. It was a $27 million deal, and I thought I was going to become the shit. I mean, I thought I was going to make major money, and so I started living that way, thinking that that money was going to come to me. And we got right down to the very end of being able to close this deal. I had it placed with the Bank of Scotland.
Welcome to the Quick Talk Podcast with Joshua Latimer, where we discuss business, life, family, faith, struggle, fire, pain, and ultimately winning.
It's time to take massive action.
Look, I can't work harder on your life or business than you do.
It's ultimately all on you.
You know, God created all the food the birds would ever need, but he doesn't put it in their nest. You've got to go get it.
10 out of 10 people die. So how about doing something today that actually matters while you still can?
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Quick Talk Podcast. I got something special for y'all today, okay? Through the power of the interwebs, it's amazing how you can connect with and meet like-minded entrepreneurs like never before in human history, right? And, you know, I've stumbled across the path of my new buddy, Ben. His name's Benjamin Surdy. And you want to talk about a story? This guy has a story. He doesn't just have the pain side of the story, which all of us have, but he has a pretty significant business that I'll let him explain and unpack. But how does someone go from, you know, bankruptcy and all kinds of dark times in their life, and a few years later have a home service company doing over $3 million a year? He's only 32 years old. He's got a family, super smart. He has a lot to share. I'm excited to introduce him because I don't think anybody's probably connected with him yet. And I think he's could be an up and coming kind of thought leader and mentor in the industry. The more I talk to him, the more impressed I am. Ben, welcome to the Quick Talk Podcast. How are you?
I'm good. Josh, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing, like, so good right now. Like, my throat, I've been sick and stuff, and I've been busy, but I'm on fire for 2018. Like, I'm excited. I love being able to connect and meet people like you, because you're going to just pour out value and gold nuggets to people. I can't wait for us to get into your story. Can you give us a nutshell overview? Take us back in time. I know your dad started out as a self-employed window cleaner, nothing majorly significant, but you kind of grew up in that environment. And then in your teen years, you know, just take us back and kind of walk us up and bring us back to where you are today. But take as much time as you need to unpack the story.
Yeah. So it's actually kind of funny, I guess, because as a kid, which a lot of entrepreneurs are, didn't fit into the school program very well. I got in a lot of trouble and I got kicked out of every school I ever went to. And because of that, you know, when I'd get kicked out of school, I had to go work with my dad. I mean, I couldn't stay home. That was what I had to go do. So I got introduced to working from a pretty young age and going out in the field with my dad. And he was self-employed, and that's what he did. He cleaned windows. And so I just got to see the whole approach of dealing with customers. And I was a pretty aggressive guy as far as my comfort level talking to people, even people way older than me. And so, you know, my dad was, I think, very lenient, and he gave me the opportunities to a little bit later in my young teens because I didn't like the way he charged. I resented it. And
is that because he charged like low prices, and even as a teenager that was kind of driving you crazy? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, I just, you know, my dad's one of, I respect my dad more than anybody. I just bought my dad a truck for his birthday, and it was something that was really special to me because I think he's given me so much in life. But, you know, when I look back, I really resented the fact that he didn't, in my opinion, back then have the courage to ask the prices that I knew that he was worth. He was a really nice guy. But I think his relationship with money and his belief system, his limiting beliefs about money, made him scared of rejection. And because of that, he wound up just never really being able to create as much revenue as I think he could have. But looking at it from the outside in, I was able to recognize that. And, you know, I wanted to protect my dad and I wanted to earn money for our family. So it gave me the opportunity to start bidding jobs. But I basically, because I was a troubled teen, you know, and I got involved with my dad's business, I wound up going on to start my own window cleaning business, when I was about 17, and just going door to door, like any window cleaning company or the guy that's just starting out, knocking on doors and, you know, doing everything I could to get money. But I'm going to stop there because I have a tendency to ramble, dude. And I want to make
sure I'm just soaking it in. I think it's really fascinating the parallel in some ways that your story has with one of my very good friends, Brandon Vaughn, who's been on the podcast many times. People just so resonate with him. And I don't know if it's a generational thing or like, it's so easy to soundbite a point in your life. Like, well, my dad didn't charge enough and that made me mad, but I know it's like so much more complex than that. And, you know, he's trying to take care of he's doing what he thinks right. And you have a different opinion of it. And you're a crazy, hyper aggressive entrepreneurial type kid. And he's looking at you like, oh my God, my son's crazy. And I just visualize that stress. Right. And just the dynamic there. Cause I think I didn't come from an entrepreneurial family at all. And so when I started my company, my mom wouldn't even talk to me for a week. She was so mad because she loves me, because she thought I was ruining my life. She was certain of it. Right. And there's just that friction and stuff. But no, take it from there. So what happened? You started your own company. I'm assuming charging higher prices, probably being a cocky 17-year-old, right? What happened after that?
You know, I ran around making good money and things like that. It wasn't anything I was super passionate about. And what wound up happening, I went to junior high school and I got kicked out of the junior high school I was in, and I got sent away to a military-type boot camp. And it was in the Boundary Waters of Minnesota. And I came back. I went to another junior high school I wound up leaving that school as well, got kicked out of that school, and wound up going to Woodinville High School. So if anybody's listening to this and knows me, I got kicked out of Woodinville High School as well. And basically I got to a point where I just said, screw it. I packed up, me and my girlfriend, Chelsea, who I'm married, I have four kids with her. We drove to Fort Lauderdale, Florida to start like a fresh brand new life, you know, where nobody knew me and I didn't have any tainted reputation or anything like that. And like a lot of us did, I got introduced to the real estate finance industry, and it was in the heyday, the mecca of when people are really making good money. And like I said, I was very comfortable, comfortable with sales and everything like that. So I started doing mortgages out in Florida, and dude, it was crazy. Like I started closing all these mortgages, and I worked for this guy, Mark Korchuk. And if he ever winds up hearing this, that's one of the worst men in the world. But I wound up working for him, and I closed all these mortgage deals. And, I showed up after the weekend. It was a Monday. I showed up to work, and I went to open the door, and it was locked. And I looked through the window, and the whole office building was empty.
You know, it's funny. I had a bit of a background in the mortgage industry, too. And right in that window of time you're talking about, are you talking like that 2005 to 2009 window, like somewhere in there? Because it was like the Wild West out there, which ultimately caused a massive financial collapse and all that with the housing crisis. That's what you're talking about, right?
Yeah, exactly. So he owed me a bunch of money and he disappeared and took off. And so I basically wound up going back home to Seattle and wound up continuing to do real estate finance. I joined a big brokerage in Kirkland. And anyway, I wound up doing mortgages. I was pretty successful, made a bunch of money. I was 18, 19 years old. and I was building a custom home, and I had BMWs and whatever. Life was artificially amazing, you know? And I wound up getting, I started getting into hard money lending, and I was down in Palm Springs at the airport, and I wound up bumping into Michael Jackson's brother. And this is, you and I were talking about this before. Sorry, I'm getting all these notifications on my computer.
It's all right. No, this is good. So we're talking about, first of all, hard money loans are where it's a super high interest loan along with a lot of points, that, but it's not based on your credit. It's based just on the property value or the post-repair property value or something. And you're talking about Michael Jackson, the king of pop Michael Jackson, not just some guy named Michael Jackson, right?
Yeah. I'm talking about Michael Jackson, and he was running into – he was trying to refinance the Neverland Ranch, and I overheard his brother talking next to me, and being the outgoing nut that I was, I opened my mouth and said, you know, I couldn't help but overhear, but, you know, that's what I specialize in. I specialize in hard money lending, and it seems that's exactly what you're looking for. And so months and months, this was a big deal, obviously. It was a $27 million deal, and I thought I was going to become the shit. I mean, I thought I was going to make major money. And so I started living that way, thinking that that money was going to come to me. And we got right down to the very end of being able to close this deal. I had it placed with the Bank of Scotland. They were going to do the deal. But part of the deal was that Michael Jackson had to perform at his concert. And he wound up pulling out. So they pulled the deal and it didn't wind up closing.
Oh, wow. So you were living based on this future swag that you were certain you had come, and you're still super young to have had that kind of money. You're just one of those A-type crazy aggressive guys that gets stuff done. You got a lot of confidence, and then the whole thing implodes right at the last minute.
Yeah, I was basically living off my credit cards and stuff because I ignored every other deal. I just was working on that deal, and I'm like, cool, whatever. I'm going to pay off all this debt. Well, when the deal didn't close, I lost everything. Like all my cars, my house, everything went down the drain. And, excuse me. And then my life just kind of spun out of control, man. I just started drinking a ton, and I wound up getting like 3 DUIs, and I created a severe uphill battle for myself to climb out of that. I just had my first son. Like I said, I got 4 kids now, but I had just had Mason, my first son, and my wife looked at me. We were sitting there in our apartment that we were getting evicted from. And she's like, what are you going to do? And at that point, my dad, I kind of skipped that because there's so much stuff that happened, but my dad had gotten into the carpet cleaning industry, in like 1994. And he had closed down the business. Years and years had gone by. He started a used car lot. But anyway, he still had his old carpet cleaning machine sitting out in his car lot out in a field, and it was all rusty, and it was shit. I mean, it was horrible. But we're sitting there thinking, my wife and I, and she's like, what are you going to do? And I'm like, I don't know. And she's like, why don't you start a carpet cleaning company? And I was like, oh, my God, there's no way. I don't want to do that, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, we started really thinking about it. And I'm like, well, it may be my only shot. And so I called my dad up and I said, hey, you still got that truck sitting in your car lot? And he said, yeah, but it's effed. I mean, it doesn't run and the machine's all decrepit. If Zach Tinker's listening to this podcast, he'll attest to that. He probably remembers that. But
my mom always said, don't despise small beginnings. But sounds like you were despising that small beginning in that moment.
Oh, dude, it was embarrassing. So what I did was we sat there and we're like, all right, what are we going to call the company? And I was like, Northwest Green Clean. That was before the whole green movement had hit. It was a brand new thing. Nobody was doing it. And I'm not even kidding, dude. I took a green rattle can. And I rattle canned the entire van with this like fluorescent green paint.
You spray painted the decrepit van with the broken down carpet cleaning truck mount thingy, and you spray painted it lime green. Got it. Okay. Keep going. This is getting good.
Like I just had to make it. I had to step it up one notch. So Yeah, and that was the thing. It was Northwest Green Clean. I literally went door to door, zero revenue. I went door to door, and what I did was, I would offer people. I'd say, listen, I've got a carpet cleaning company. My name's Ben, and I would love to clean one room of carpet for you, just to show you the quality of work that I do. I'm not going to charge you anything. I just want you to see the quality of work, and if you like it, I would love the opportunity to give you an estimate and clean the rest of your home. And they're like, sure. And that's what I did. I'd go out in the pour, you know, I'm in Seattle, so it rains every freaking day here. So I was out in the pouring rain, walking door to door. And then I slowly started landing deals, and I slowly started having money come in. So, you know, my first year in business, I did $67,000, and that was like a blessing, dude. I remember sitting there with my wife and super emotional, being like, okay, you know, we can do this. And then the rest is kind of history, and I guess we'll get into some of the details of that.
And just to recap for the audience, like, I know we spent a lot of time on the backstory, but you have an incredible story, and it really sets up nice, because what you have today, you know, and you guys can connect with Ben on Facebook, and, you know, there'll be a description in the show notes and a link, but his name's Benjamin Surdi, S-U-R-D-I. Like, his company is like a fine-tuned machine. It's just weird listening to the whole backstory, how in such a short time, you know, you guys are doing north of $3 million. You have a full team. I'm sure there's still challenges, but what a significant turnaround from losing your house and all that stuff. I mean, how did that happen? How did you go from the grateful, humbled $67,000 year one and really scale something as big as what you have now?
Well, I started figuring out that there was actually money in it. And I think when I started seeing real money come through, I got pretty serious about it. And I was like, I talked to my wife and I said, I think I'm really going to go for it. And that's when I started to learn how important branding was and how important uniforms were and how important to me. So my second year in business, I think I did 180, and then I did 370, and then we did 580, 780, we did 1.1, and it just kept going up and up and up. But like at the very beginning, I remember I knew that I could not show up to people's homes, like not wearing a uniform, not doing any of that. So I spent a lot of time, like as soon as I possibly could, I got a new for me van. And I got it painted, and that was a huge deal to me.
So your fleet of service vehicles isn't spray painted with green paint at this point, I'm assuming, right? pivoted away from that as soon as you could. That's awesome.
Dude, okay. As soon as I could, I had that machine, the carpet cleaning machine that was in that ugly van. I had that machine pulled out and had it installed into this nice, fresh-looking van. And, that was the best feeling. But I just sat down and I was really, really particular about how I wanted to look like a franchise. And I knew that from the very beginning. And because I thought, you know, image has so much to do with people's perception of value. It just does, you know? And so when I started, my dad, when he was a carpet cleaner, he charged 30 cents a square foot. And that's, I would say in my area where I live, 30 cents a square foot is still the average. And so when I started doing my carpet cleaning company, I was charging like 75 cents a square foot, 80 cents a square foot. And that allowed me to make so much more profit. And the only reason I was really able to charge that amount of money was because I built a very robust sales system. I had a binder. I had a whole sales presentation that I'd walk people through. You know, my uniforms were dialed. My truck was wrapped. I had business cards. I had brochures. Like, and I was just a mini, mini little freckle in the scheme of things.
Yeah,
you know?
But you know what? You're right. The perception of the customers, they don't know that, right? And if you look and feel and smell and taste and the experience presents a superior premium luxury service, then that's what you are to them. One of my best friends had a tree company when we were young. and he only had one truck. It was the biggest piece of crap. But he, on the side of it, he had some vinyl letters that said truck number 5, right? So he was pretending he had a fleet, right? Like, that was his crappy version of creating this perception. But it is it is powerful. And, you know, guys, Ben's actually going to be giving a full presentation about his sales process and the way he does consultative selling and how he's charging more than double what other people do in the sales and marketing super course that's coming out. And that's going to be amazing. Ben, thanks for agreeing to do that. It's so cool. But take us down that road now. Like, what do you say to the little guy who's fighting the good fight? He's a good guy. He's a great dad. He, you know, loves his wife. He's trying to make it work, but he doesn't have enough margin to scale. He's not making enough money. What does he do?
Here's what I noticed as I was doing research and developing things is I watched other companies go in and they would start low and try and work high. And you've been in sales and you just can't do that. My whole methodology behind it was that I need to throw out the biggest price I possibly can and then work my way down. So my advice to somebody that's just starting, if you're not like a polished salesperson and you don't have all that confidence yet, is that you've got to create 3 packages for people to choose from, the good, better, best type of thing. And that 60% of the time they're going to go with the middle package. It's like statistically proven. And I've tested many, many different methods of pricing over the years. With the good, better, best method, when you go in, where most companies, and I'm talking about carpet cleaning right now because that's where my experience level is, but it's window washing. You know, if you're doing window washing, we clean the glass, we clean the screens, and then we seal the glass with a water repellent the last 6 months. And that's our platinum package. And with our, you know, with our gold package, we clean your windows and your screens. With our silver, we just clean your windows or whatever, mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, and we did the same thing. There's this really – have you heard about the DVD study or DVD player thing? And just to speak to your point, not to get you off track, but they did this study where they asked 100 people. They showed them this Sony DVD player. They showed them one. And they told them the features of it and told them it cost $70 and said, you know, it's really great and everything. And then they surveyed the 100 people and said, how many of you would buy this? I forget the exact numbers, but 42 people said, yeah, I'd buy it. And then they did the same thing to another group of 100 people, except this time they showed them 2 different DVD players. Basically the same, but 2 brands. They showed them the features. They're both really nice. And the question they asked is, would you guys consider buying one of these DVD players? And it went up to 78% of people said yes. And the only difference, the whole purpose being that when there's something in the brain, it's science, it's psychological truth, it's just the way it is. When you lay packages out for people, they just feel inclined to pick one. And you know how someone calls, they just want their couch cleaned, and then you end up selling them $1,000 worth of stuff. It's because of what you're talking about, right?
Yeah, it's just they've got 3 options, you, or you, you know, instead of just throwing a price out and having them say, oh, boy, that's twice as much as the last guy. Thanks anyway, you know, mm-hmm. But yeah. So the biggest thing with sales that I learned is that, you know, you've got to have rapport, obviously, with the client, and that they've got to see you as some form of an expert, you know. So my whole philosophy behind how we approach the sales for us, the 6 reasons clients choose PureClean is how I start the sales presentation. And there's 6 things, and these 6 things are very unique to my company, and they're things that are really thought through that I know that my competitors cannot mimic, and they can't say that they do it. And so we always start a sales presentation by saying, you know, I'm super happy to be here. And, you know, what I like my clients to know, I like them to know a little bit about our company. And so we always do that. We start the sales presentation off by going through those 6 things. And after we've done that, I think it just builds a lot more value so that when you do go to present the price, there's not that shock where they're like, oh, after we go through these 6 things, they're expecting a big price.
Yes. It's powerful. It's powerful. You're simultaneously establishing authority, and at the same time as you're establishing authority, you're pre-positioning the fact that it's going to cost a significant amount of money. That you're not a normal company. That there's something different. You're completely differentiating yourself by even taking them through that company history and the 6 things and all that stuff. Right.
Yeah, and you know, once we've done that, I always go over my highest level of service. So I, you know, we grab our platinum, and I'm redoing all these packages right now, actually. So this is a bit outdated, but what we do is we start with our platinum package, and we go over each step of the cleaning process. And there's just, you may have heard this story too, but there was a beer company way back, and they were struggling big time with sales. And so they hired a big marketing exec team to come out and consult with them. And they said, we got to turn this around. What are we going to do? And so the marketing exec guy starts walking through the brewery, and he says, tell me about how you guys make your beer. And so the owner walked him through, and he was super passionate about how they made beer. I mean, he walked him to the stainless steel bats, and he says, we do this, and it, you know, we do this for by hand for 24 hours. I don't know the exact details, but you get the idea. And he went through step by step. And when he finished, the marketing exec looks at him and he says, that's what we've got to do. We've got to tell people how you make your beer. And that company is now one of the largest beer distributors in the world, and that's Sam Adams.
Wow. That is power. Dude, that is so awesome, because we all have unique attributes to our companies, to the ways, to the systems, the processes, the way that we do things, and even the words we use to describe things. If you spend time and get really intentional, everybody listening, on the way, focus in on the way that you unpack your service to make it differentiated and interesting and passionate and all that stuff, that by itself is going to raise your average ticket, right? Because you're decommoditizing. I know, Ben, you excuse me, you don't listen to the podcast, we just met and stuff, but I talk about this idea of the $7 loaf of bread, and really it sounds like your company is that, meaning like bread is like the ultra commodity, where it's like a buck for a loaf of bread or whatever it is, and you got 27 brands of white bread, and there's not really much differentiation with it. But then there's always this other rack of bread, like the artisan bread, right? The wrapper's different. The shape of the loaf is different. It's got just little nuances about it that are different, and it's on a different shelf, and it costs 5 or 6 or 7 times more than regular bread. And there is a market for that. And that's what you've tapped into, right?
Yeah, it's all about the experience and really articulating how you make your beer. So I always tell people that. I always tell my sales guys, and I can always tell when they're not using the sales binder. I can see it in their numbers. And I say, you're not using your sales binder, are you? And he's like, no, I haven't been using it. And I said, dude, people have to know how you make your beer before they're going to buy into it and be willing to exchange their hard-earned money for the value that you're trying to offer them. If you don't do that, you're shooting yourself in the foot. So anyways, that's exactly what we do. We tell people how we make our beer, and we get them very excited. Of course, we ask questions before we do this, because you want to make sure that you align your pitch to things that they care about. You know, does anybody in your home have allergies? Is health more important to you, or is appearance more important to you? You know, we have all these questions that lead up to this, but that's powerful, man. I mean, it's just these things, when you're not doing them, when you do start doing them, it doubles your income. And so when my competitors are all watching me and they're scratching their head wondering how I'm growing twice their speed, it's because they're just not approaching it in that way. And, I think that has a lot to do with how much you can charge. And
well, and for people like me and you, this is so obvious, like it's almost frustrating, but I feel like we have an unfair advantage, because I came out of the mortgage world too. I was doing hardcore like boiler room phone sales for Quicken Loans. They're an online lender. They're huge. During that same window of time. And I got some really extensive, deep sales training. It was very, very systematic. And it was all about overcoming objections and packaging and positioning and the way that you identify pain and the way that you take back control of the conversation. Like, and I think your average service person didn't have that experience. I know for a fact, like you understanding a sales process and being deeply trained in it, kind of in like a really creepy industry at the time. I was really young as well when I was doing that, and I really didn't realize like how we were contributing to this mess and all that. But there's a lot of value from learning that like that stuff. And I brought that to my service company, and obviously you did too. I think for a lot of people, they were just a technician working for someone, and then they said, you know, I can do this on my own. And so they start a company, and they play by these invisible rules set by whoever they work for, thinking of this is how you charge, and this is how you give a bid, and they just do stuff without really stepping back and looking at these processes. Have you thought or seen that to be the case as well?
Yeah, I mean, luckily I'm fortunate enough to where nobody's left and tried to, you know, start up a company and do that. But I think that everybody thinks that, oh, like my competitors watch me and they'll start to talk like me and walk like me and, you know, the whole Me Too thing. And it just doesn't work for them because it's not genuine and they don't believe that. And it's not part of them. They're just trying to follow the leader. So you've really got to believe in what you do big time. I tell my people that too. When one of my salespeople is, you know, maybe not bringing in the revenue he should, it's a belief problem. He doesn't believe in the product. I didn't do a good enough job building value to him on that particular, you know, item or what have you. But you touched on a big thing, dude. And this is something you and I both did, I'm sure. Is you've probably heard this before, but you know, they say if you read 4 books on a particular subject, you become an expert on that subject. And if you look, I'm sitting in my office right now and I've got books everywhere, dude. Like I read a lot and I'm sure you do too, but I'm looking on my bookshelf and I can see The New Rules of Money, Rick Edelman. I can see Missed Fortune, Doug Andrews. These are all books that when I did mortgages, who the hell wants to read about mortgages? Nobody. But I read all these books so that when I was talking to my clients, I had a much higher level of apparent education on the matter so that I appeared as an expert. And if you appear as an expert, people will pay you more. And that's just the bottom line. So you take that to, you know, a service business. If you haven't read any books and you haven't become an expert in your field, then you don't deserve it almost to be charging the top of the top price points because you just don't have that apparent value yet, you know? And I think
It's the reason that you know, on pharmaceutical commercials, the actor who's playing the doctor wears the white lab coat. I mean, in a way, when we enter a customer's home and we want to get the highest possible ticket, and it's not just about taking, but it is about delivering on that promise and serving at a high level and the whole experience and the follow-up after. And I know that's important to you too. But positioning yourself as an expert and creating authority is massively important. But you're right. You have to put in the down and dirty work to actually know this stuff, to know the nomenclature, to know to work on your scripts, to practice, to try these things and sound really dumb the first 17 times you do it, but then do it anyway. And a lot of people, honestly, they just aren't willing to execute on things like this. And it's going to hold them back and their business will be, you know, worse off for it. But that's just the truth of it, right?
Yeah. And there's that, and I think that there's a huge sacrifice, and luckily entrepreneurs are of a certain bloodline and we all share that commonality with each other in that we become obsessive about our work. And the thing that allows you to go from 0 to 1 million real quick like that is that you've got, like, I would work all day. And then I'd sit in my office at my house and I'd work until 4:30 in the morning. The sun would start coming up and I'm working on my website. You know, I'm reading how to code and I'm reading how to do this because they didn't have money back then. Like, what are you going to do? You can't pay anybody. So you got to learn how to do it. But I think that, you know, if you really want it, you've got to reach down and grab a pair and make it happen. You know, you've got to put in the work and work the long hours. It's not easy. I mean, it's stressful, man. I mean, it's hard work to run a big company and you deal with a lot of stress points and you're dealing with people all the time, but it's super rewarding at the end of the day.
Well, and you know, look, I saw the video on your page, your Facebook page when I was stalking you about the truck that you bought your dad, right? Life is about a lot more than money. If you know anything about me, money is something that's really interesting and it's a tool and all that. I think it's like a fun game to learn how to build things and make money and be profitable and all that. But it's money doesn't buy happiness, but being broke doesn't buy happiness either, right? And what was it like? Tell us how you bought your dad a brand new F-150 What was his reaction? Like, that was really a full circle event for you, it seems like, based on the story and what happened before. What was that like? That's amazing.
I just felt like I love my dad, and I think we all love our parents, and they're not going to be around forever, you know? And it was, you know, my dad's been driving. My dad's a person that'll never buy a brand new truck. He just won't do it, or, you know, whether it's affordability or whatever. So he's driving around this truck, and he just kept telling me that his transmission's slipping and it, the blown head gasket and this and that. And my dad actually works for me. He's my rug cleaning technician in our shop. So he cleans all the rugs that come through our company. But he always has, and he always will do anything for anybody. He's the most generous guy. So the very first time, you know, that I saw that I had the opportunity to do this, I freaking jumped on it. But dude, it was priceless. If anybody's listening to it and they want to experience it, I think it was a really memorable experience for my family. You know, we were all there. But even people that don't even know me that watch the video, they're like, dude, that was pretty cool. That was pretty special, you know, and crying and things like that. But yeah, he had no idea. I bought the truck. I went to the Ford dealership and I bought him a brand new F-150, and he just had no idea. We invited him over. I parked it in my garage and, you know, they pulled up in the driveway and I grabbed a bag out of my truck and I said, Dad, here's your Christmas present. I ordered it and it never showed up. So sorry, here you go. And he opened the bag and I had the key wrapped up in tissue paper, like a huge wad of tissue paper. And it's all in this film, whoever wants to watch it. But anyways, he starts peeling it back and he starts laughing because he can't figure out what's going on. And he gets down to it after like a minute and a half of peeling all these layers back. And I looked at my wife and I said, open the garage. So he was facing the opposite way. So she opened the garage door, starts going up right as he's about to pull out the key. And he pulls out the key and he looks at me and he looks at my mom and he just started crying, you know? And, it was awesome, man. It was
that right there is what small business is about, man. Like, that is just priceless. It's so cool. And it comes down to those 3 in the morning nights of educating yourself, learning the business, becoming an expert, studying sales, studying marketing, all this stuff. You got to put in the work, everybody. You got to work really hard. It's true. One of my favorite quotes, Ben, and I'll let you go. I appreciate your time, is everybody sees the wine, but no one sees the crushing of the grapes. Isn't that awesome? Like,
yeah.
Like people can look at your wine, like you have, you know, 3.2, I think you said you did with your company. I know you got some restoration stuff and your carpet cleaning and all this stuff. That's a lot of revenue. And a lot of people listening to this can't really wrap their head around the fact that that's real and that it's possible. And it doesn't have to take a lifetime. Like, it can happen pretty quick if you understand some of these systems and things that we talked about today. That's the wine, right? But they weren't with you when you were down in the dark place with the spray-painted van knocking on doors in the rain and studying sales and learning how to build a package and learning how to, you know, tweak your process. And then we hired your first sales guy and you try to replicate it. There's tons more to the story for you, yeah, for me, for everybody that's achieved anything. And it's powerful. And I'm really, really thankful you went so deep and shared so much personal stuff. I know we're going to get a lot of response to this, Ben. And again, for anybody wanting to connect with Ben, super neat guy. You can learn a lot from him. You can just go on Facebook and search for Benjamin Surdi, S-U-R-D-I is the last name. You guys should be able to figure out Benjamin. Do you have any closing thoughts? Or let me ask you a better question. What would you say to the younger version of yourself if you could go back in time and start over? What advice would you give to you or someone like you?
Work hard, but just make sure that you pay as much attention to your kids and your wife as you do your work. You know what I mean? I think that's a weird response, but I think
it's a perfect response and totally in alignment with everything I'm all about, brother. So I think it's amazing. We can't lose ourselves, right? In the work, because it doesn't define us anyway, and it can all go away in a second, right? Even your company you have now, like, things can happen. It could all burn and crash, and who knows, right? But your family and the people that love you and the relationships you have are by far the most important thing. We often forget it. Entrepreneurs just are really bad about that. So I think that's a great encouragement, man. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Josh. Appreciate it, man.
Hey, thanks for hanging out, friends. And from all of us here at the Quick Talk Podcast team, we hope you love today's show. We hope that you were inspired to become a doer and not just a listener. Apply what you've heard today in your own business and watch things change for the better. Lastly, remember that all the money in the world can't save your soul. Seek first the kingdom of God, my friends. We'll see you next time.
For more information about the Quick Talk Podcast or Joshua's other businesses, visit our website, quicktalkpodcast.com. Have a blessed day.